streets are screaming now. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Today, we're going to move our vision to what's going on in Europe, especially in France. There's a general strike going on, and it's over pensions primarily, although it's been building for years. Part of French President Macron's plan to reform the labor markets, as he says, which has nothing to do with reform. It has to do with reducing wages to benefit French corporations, make them more competitive in the world, reduce their costs, in other words. And the focus now has shifted to pensions. Look, pension payments, think of them as deferred wages. You know, workers put money into these pensions over their lifetime, make contributions, receive lower wage increases in order to enable the contributions, and then they hope when they retire to be able to get some of it back in a pension payment. So they're really wages. They're deferred wages. And when government, on behalf of corporations, attempts to reduce pension payments in various ways, what it's really doing is taking back the wages that workers earned. And, of course, reducing corporate costs as a result. It's a form of indirect exploitation. And when you're talking about tens and hundreds of billions of dollars a year, it's a big exploitation. Okay, so the French are rebelling. Interesting, you know, everywhere else it appears in the advanced economies, workers are rolling over as far as the theft of their pensions are concerned. This has been going on for quite some time. And at the lead of this whole effort of stealing pensions is the U.S. model, the American model. And it seems to me that what's going on in France is that Macron is trying to impose an American model of pension retirement with some French twist to it. And the workers over there are rebelling, and they're all rebelling. It's a mass strike. It's a general strike, I believe. Well, we're going to have a guest on here who's an eyewitness to that, who travels over to France quite a bit, a trade unionist. And he's going to tell us what's going on over there in terms of these general strikes against the pension theft overhaul, labor reform, whatever you want to call it, that Macron is trying to pull off. Alan Benjamin, are you with me? Hello? Well, I guess Alan's not on yet, so I guess I'm going to have to carry the ball here for a while. Hopefully he'll join us. As a background to this, what I'd like to do is give everybody a little explanation of a pension system in the U.S., this American model that Macron, the president of France, is attempting to introduce. Okay, the American model is really a product, the retirement model, which is busted, by the way. And I'll explain how here. Little history of pensions and retirements in post-World War II America. Because before that, there was no pension, really. Before World War II, what you had was only managers got some sort of a pension from their company, senior managers. You know, no one else had any pensions of any kind. And then, of course, the first change to that was the introduction of the Social Security system in 1936-37, which started to take effect, I believe, during the later years of World War II. So Social Security, which is kind of a government pension, you might say, really began in the post-war period. People started getting benefits from Social Security in the post-war period. How did it start? Well, you know, it had to do with the crisis in the 1930s, and people had no retirement at all whatsoever. And as a way of trying to put money in the hands of households in general, particularly seniors, who when they retired went into, you know, total economic collapse, unless they lived with relatives. And if they didn't have relatives or the relatives couldn't afford, because they weren't working either, well, then seniors, retirement, you know, totally abject poverty. Okay, so Social Security was designed to put some money in people's pockets for retirement, but it was never designed to provide a full retirement in the U.S. It was designed to provide one-third of what might be needed in retirement. The other two-thirds were supposed to be personal savings during your lifetime, and another last third was supposed to be the private pension system. That took form after immediately after World War II, when unions began to negotiate what's called, in their contracts with employers, the big employers, what's called defined benefit pension plans, you know, DBPs, defined benefit pensions. What's a defined benefit pension? Well, as I said, that's what's negotiated. It's a private pension negotiated by the union with the company. And the structure of defined benefit pension plans is that the employer is negotiated to put a contribution into a pension fund, so many cents per hour per employee into the pension fund. And that pension fund, when the person retires, is required to pay so much per month, per year of service, you know, like maybe $50 per month, per year of service. So if you worked for 20 years for the company and it was $50 per month, you'd get $1,000 for the rest of your lifetime, right? That's a defined benefit pension plan. And the companies were liable to provide that whether the pension plan managers were able to invest the pension money to realize a profit in revenue. In other words, if they made bad investments and the pension fund did not make money, well, then the company had to find other ways to fund that pension plan out of its general revenues to guarantee workers the pension. It had a liability attached to it. So much cents per hour, so much dollars per year of service every month, and liability. Now, why would employers go along with that? Excuse me, with that in the late 1940s, early 50s? You know, it was the steel workers, the mine workers, auto workers who started negotiating these defined benefit pension plans en masse in the late 1940s, early 1950s. All right. Well, here's why. Here's how employers accepted this. They accepted it, first of all, because the government said, whatever contributions, Mr. Employer, you make to the pension fund, you can deduct from your taxes to the government. In other words, the contributions were tax deductible. So the employers weren't really paying so much cents per hour per worker. They were paying much less, depending on how much tax deduction they were able to realize. Well, that was an incentive for them not to resist the unions and negotiate defined benefit pension plans. There was more. The government said that the amount of the pension fund, both the contribution and whatever profits from investments the fund realized, could be indicated on corporate balance sheets as a gain. That meant that the company looked richer than it actually was from revenues, from its sales. In other words, by paying for pensions, it increased its profits. Now, if it increased its profits, then the CEOs would get better compensation because the company did better. In other words, the CEOs would get a bigger stock award or a bigger salary increase or whatever. So the CEOs had an incentive to negotiate pension plans as well. So did the corporate accountants, you know, because we get a tax deduction out of it. But more important was when they started negotiating these pension plans in the late 40s, early 50s, when they started negotiating them, the workforce was very young. So the outpayments from the pensions were not occurring. So there was no liability, you see, to actually ensure the payments would occur. So it was a nice little scratch my back, I'll scratch your back arrangement in the late 40s, early 50s to negotiate pensions. But the pensions contribution by employers was a way of reducing the actual immediate wage increase payments. You see, the employers in negotiations would say, hey, we're contributing 20 cents per hour more into your pension fund, so your request for 50 cent an hour increase really should be, we're only going to pay 30 cents an hour increase because we're contributing 20 cents. But it was nice for the companies because it's a tax deductible wage increase, a tax deductible deferred wage increase. Okay, so that's how the thing really originated, what we call defined benefit pensions, the other one-third of the retirement model. They called it a three-stool model, right? Along with Social Security and personal savings. And that was supposed to, in the early 50s, end up providing workers who would retire eventually, starting, you know, probably in the 80s, roughly in the 80s, that would provide them a retirement that they could live off of. Now, fast forward to the 1980s and neoliberalism and Ronald Reagan and what was the beginning of a massive attack in the American model on private defined benefit pensions. A massive attack. Well, what form did this massive attack take? I guess we could ask. Well, during the 1980s, a big change was the legalization of what's called 401k plans. 401k refers to the IRS code 401 that provided for profit sharing, voluntary, temporary profit sharing plans by companies with their employees. Well, they weren't sharing much, but 401ks became private contribution pension plans. And companies began introducing 401ks and eliminating their defined benefit pension plans because the DBPs were now supposed to start paying out in the 80s. Now workers were older and start retiring, and companies had a liability to do so. And if their private pension funds did not invest properly, they had to divert money from the general revenues. They did not want to do that. So Reagan and neoliberalism made it legal for companies to dump their defined benefit plans and replace them with 401k plans. Now, what's the difference? Well, 401k plans have no liability requirement on behalf of the employer. In other words, the employer can put money in, a contribution, and workers can put a contribution in their 401k. They can be matched by employers up to a limit. Or employees don't have to. Employers aren't required. And employers no longer had to ensure that the defined contribution plan, the 401k, invested appropriately. There was no what's called fiduciary responsibility to invest safely and conservatively to ensure the fund, the 401k fund, grew and was safe. In fact, 401ks leave it up to the worker to figure out where to invest. You know, do I put it in CDs? Do I put it in company stock? In fact, companies at the time required you to put it in company stock. And if the company went under, then you lost everything, right? You know, a good example of that was later Enron. My company went under and workers lost everything in their 401k plans. Okay, so no liability. Oh, that was nice. Well, they could contribute or they could not contribute. That was nice too. And 401ks, you know, meant that individuals had to manage their own plans. Well, come on, you know, you can invest in stocks and bonds. How many workers know where to invest in stocks and bonds, right? Well, some of them think they do, but they lose their shirt, as we saw in the last crisis, where $4 trillion in 401k pension values collapsed. Yeah, they lost $4 trillion. Yeah. So, you know, even experts, even great investor experts lose their shirt when they invest their funds. And how do you expect workers to know what to invest in? So, you know, they don't know. They invest in the company. And then if the company's in trouble, they lose everything. All right. So 401k started rapidly replacing defined benefit pension plans. Companies started dumping their DBPs, particularly if they weren't unionized, they started replacing them with 401ks in which the contribution was far less. Now you got to understand, DBPs require a payment of so much per month per year of service, guaranteed. 401ks do not have that guarantee. Very important difference between the two. Well, employers like that. So they started replacing DBPs with 401ks. And by the year 2000, the vast majority who were once covered by DBPs, by the year 2000 and George W. Bush, they were gone. Except in a public workers section, you know, state workers and teachers, and in a few very strong remaining unions who couldn't have their jobs offshore, you know, like longshore workers, dock workers, and transport workers, and so forth, right? But all those workers in those industries that could be offshored and were being offshored by free trade, they are the ones suffered from this mass diversion and conversion of pensions into 401ks. Now, under Reagan, those workers who still had DBPs in manufacturing, and the offshoring was just beginning then, that still had DBPs, Reagan allowed those companies, even those with unions, right, to do two things. One, any of the surplus, in other words, any of the investment earnings from the pension fund could be taken out of the pension fund by the employer, by the company. It was ruled that the pension fund belongs to the employer, even though workers put all their money into it. In other words, they gave their money back to the employer. And the employer could do what they want with it. Well, workers didn't know they gave their wages, deferred wages, back to the employer by negotiating contributions by the employer into the fund. They didn't know that, but the law said it. Yeah, it was the company's money. So companies were skimming off the top. They were called rescissions, you see, legal word, off the top of their pension funds and investing it in who knows what and giving themselves, bigger payouts or investing in buying another company or whatever, rescissions, right? And during the Reagan years, something else. It was legal for a company to merge and acquire another company and keep the entire pension fund for themselves. Yeah. And we had corporate raiders during the 1980s who were doing just that, who were putting money together from other investors and borrowing money, junk bonds, to take over a company, you know, a unfriendly takeover, grab the company, grab the pension fund, pay it out to themselves, and chop up the company and sell it off in pieces. That was totally legal. And the bigger pension fund you had, the bigger target you were. I don't know, some of you older, maybe you watched the movie Wall Street, yeah, with the, what's his name, Douglas there, way back in the 1980s, won Academy Award, Wall Street. Well, it was just about that. It was about a financial thieves in Wall Street taking over the pension fund of an airline and making the airline go bankrupt and disappear and losing all the jobs and keeping the pension fund. Oh, that was very common during those during the Reagan years, right? What happens during the Clinton years? Well, you know, the worst of these corporate takeovers were stalled in the 1990s because it got so bad under Reagan that a law was passed in 1990, I think, that said, okay, if you take over a pension fund like that, you got to pay a 50% excise tax to the government. So that slowed those kind of takeovers, but there were so many of them, you know, so many companies were gone and pensions were lost, you know, on a massive scale, and companies diverted to 401k plans at the same time. But under Clinton, what we saw under Clinton was a further attack on pensions in other ways. Well, how was that? Well, in the 1990s is when healthcare started price gouging, when health insurance companies started double-digit increases in their insurance premiums, and the price of healthcare started going through the roof, driven by health insurance companies and by hospital chains, for-profit hospital chains, linking up with Wall Street. Once again, Wall Street was loaning insurance companies and private hospital chains money to buy up their competitors, to expand, to concentrate, to become more monopoly-like, which enabled them to raise prices, because we know monopolies can raise prices. Well, you know, the monopolization of the healthcare and health insurance industries under Clinton was really the main cause for driving these healthcare costs, which is still going on because we still have the further monopolization going on. And now these health insurance companies and hospital chains are buying up competitors in other countries, you see. So Wall Street loans them the money, and Wall Street says, hey, we're going to loan you money only if you get 22% or more profits from your operations. So what did these companies do, health insurance companies? Well, they started dumping people who had real illnesses from coverage, right? And they only wanted to insure people who weren't unhealthy and needed to use medical services. And we know that whole story. Right from the 1990s on, you know, especially under George W. Bush and Obama, we have health insurance costs, you know, 10-20% increase every year, and it's going on again, by the way, under Trump. So, you know, we had this runaway healthcare cost, and companies providing health insurance, you know, had to start paying more and more for health insurance. Well, they dumped a lot of that health insurance costs onto their workers, you know, cutting benefits, making workers paying more, lowering the coverage, getting cheaper plans and cheaper coverage plans, making workers pay more for deductibles and co-pays and so forth, right? That was all because of the monopolization going on in the healthcare industry. But even passing the costs on to workers was only one solution employers used. The other, made possible, and here's the connection to pensions, made possible under Clinton, was that employers were allowed to divert 20% of their rising healthcare costs from their pension funds. In other words, they could drag money out of their pension funds in order to pay for the employer share of the cost of rising health care. 20%. Well, that undermined the pensions, the defined benefit pensions we're talking about here, even further. That was the scam in the 90s, you see. Rescissions and skimming off the top and capturing by mergers, acquisitions, pension funds. That was the scam of the 80s. And, of course, 401ks was associated with that, in lieu of that, see. The scam of the 90s was diverting money from pension funds. And the second scam under Clinton was allowing employers to have what's called contribution holidays, pension contribution holidays. If you weren't in a union and you company like IBM or something, or public sector, states and localities and teachers and so forth, had defined benefit pension plans still, right? They were allowed to stop payments into that pension fund. Yeah, and of course, a lot of the, in lieu of the payments into the pension fund, went into trying to deal with the rising healthcare costs. So you see, the healthcare crisis is really integrated with the retirement crisis. Okay, so that's what happened under our friend Bill Clinton. Contribution holidays and 20% diversion to cover company health care costs. Okay, so we get to the 2000s here. And what do we see in the 2000s? We see mass dumping of pensions by corporations onto the government. See, the government has this agency called the Defined Benefit Pension Corporation, PBGC, and it's really a dumping ground for employers who go belly up. If they go belly up, what happens to the pension? Well, they dump their liability, if they had a DBP, onto the government, into this agency called the PBGC. Now, workers, when that happens to their pension, their company goes out of business, let's say, when that happens to their pensions, they don't get what they had negotiated with the company when it was in business in terms of pensions. No, they get a fraction of that. Typically, on average, about 55% of what they would have received from the company, they'll get from the PBGC. All right. And in the early 2000s, we had a mass exodus of companies, particularly airline companies and other companies, manufacturing companies who are moving overseas, into the PBGC. So workers who had a deferred wage that was coming got it cut in half. Companies were also allowed to dump their defined benefit plan and replace it with what's called a cash balance plan, which is kind of like a 401k. It's a conversion into a 401k, a little different than 401k, but basically a kind of 401k. We saw also attempts to privatize Social Security retirement. In other words, we're talking about defined benefit pension plans, the private pension. Now we're going to the government pension, Social Security. Under Bill Clinton, he attempted to privatize or allow some of the Social Security trust fund, like a pension fund, to invest in Wall Street. Yeah, that's what he proposed. You know, when he was being impeached, he was doing everything that businesses and conservatives wanted as a way of trying to fend off his impeachment. So impeachment was very useful for corporate America at that particular time. They got everything they wanted from him, including offshoring and free trade and everything. Social Security was possibly privatized. Now, why would they want to allow the Social Security Trust Fund to invest in Wall Street? The trust fund was required to invest in government bonds, treasuries of various kinds. Well, where did they get the money to invest? Well, isn't it paying out the payroll tax for Social Security? Isn't it paying that out and pay as you go, as they say, to retirees? Well, that's what it was doing until 1986. In 1986, the payroll tax was boosted significantly. Payroll tax was raised significantly, and it was the amount that could be taxed was indexed to inflation. So the amount of what you earned every year under Social Security, if you earn more every year, the government made sure after 1986 it would tax you at the higher rate for whatever your increase in earnings happened to be. Nice system. It was all designed, and by the way, Alan Greenspan was the chair of the commission under Reagan to introduce this payroll tax hike, massive payroll tax hike on workers. At the same time, by the way, under Reagan, corporate taxes and investor taxes were being cut right and left on a massive scale. And that's been going on ever since, right through Trump, right? Okay, so reduce corporate taxes, right, and raise payroll taxes. Reduce income taxes on the rich and increase payroll taxes on workers. And by the way, you know, the arrangement was if you were making above a certain threshold, and that was way above what the average worker would make, then anything you made from your investments or from your salary above this ceiling, you paid no taxes on whatsoever. You know, so the rich and the managers were exempted from this price increase indexing of payroll tax payments, you see. It was working class that really were paying this, not anybody above it. Okay, so, you know, what we got with Social Security is a massive surplus began to develop after this payroll tax hike in 1986, a massive surplus. So by the 2000s, there was $4 trillion of surplus by the late 90s in the Social Security Retirement Trust Fund, $4 trillion. Now, that was hundreds of billions every year surplus generated. The whole idea and the justification for doing this in 1986 was that, look, we got all these baby boomers born after World War II, and they're going to start retiring after 2000, you know, 2010 in particular, you know, 65 years old, you know, started being born in 45, 65 after 2010, the baby boomers were going to start hitting the retirement rolls at 65. So that, you know, we had to raise payroll taxes and create this Social Security surplus in order to fund the Social Security retirement payments of the boomers when they start retiring. That was the justification. But wait a minute. What actually happened was every year that there was a surplus generated by billions, the government borrowed that money, took that actual money deducted from your paycheck as a payroll tax, took that money from the trust fund and spent it on whatever else it wanted. And what the government did was place a special treasury bond in the Social Security Trust Fund, you know, equal to the amount that it stole from the trust fund. So they could say, hey, no, the value is still there in the trust fund, you know, but the cash isn't, you see, the cash value isn't. And of course, the government used that surplus, especially Bill Clinton, to say, hey, I balanced the budget. Well, he balanced the budget by taking money from Social Security and, by the way, from federal employees' pension plans as well, and saying, look, I balanced the budget because I stole the money. Yeah, that's how he balanced the budget in the late 90s. Okay, so Social Security, he opened the door, Clinton did as well, to the privatization of Social Security. In other words, using the Social Security trust fund to buy private securities, stocks and bonds, private corporate stocks and bonds, you see. And that's what the big investment banks in the U.S. wanted, because if you're buying stocks and bonds, you're paying them a fee to buy stocks and bonds. And just imagine 50 million workers, you know, getting Social Security benefits, you know, 50 million of them taking some of their contributions of the year and buying stocks in it. Well, they'd make a lot of money, right? They love to privatize Social Security. You know, they salivate over the Social Security retirement fund. They want to get their hands on that fund one way or another. And Clinton opened the door for them, saying, hey, you know, let's let the government invest in Wall Street. You know, because how could workers invest? They don't know what's going on in Wall Street. Oh, the government will do it. Well, it didn't fly. You know, that's one thing that didn't fly Clinton proposed. But under Bush, after 2000, privatizing Social Security became a big objective. He tried like hell to do that. He didn't succeed, but corporate and Wall Street America have not ceased their plan to privatize Social Security if they can. So we got under George W. Bush the mass dumping of pension plans, defined benefit pension plans, onto the PBGC, onto the government, and workers got their pension payouts cut in half. Right, and we got this new offensive going after Social Security to privatize it, right, to allow speculation with Social Security funds, right? We got what's called cash balance plans, and we got the government allowing corporations to drop out of the PBGC. Okay, well, what is the PBGC? I said before, is this agency that manages busted pension, defined benefit pension plans that are dumped on it when companies go bankrupt or something. Companies, all companies who participate in this have to pay a fee based upon the size of the workforce and so forth, and its pension fund to the PBGC. Well, they were all required to do that before George W. Bush. Now they could drop out, and they started dropping out en masse. So now the PBGC has to be bailed out periodically by government and general tax revenues. The employers don't have to fund it to the extent that they used to. So we got all these big changes under George W. Bush. In other words, we see a pattern here, don't we? From the 80s under Reagan and the 90s under Clinton and the 2000s under Bush, attack, eliminate various ways, defined benefit pension plans that are deferred wage increases that are guaranteed to workers when they retire. Get rid of it and replace it with phony 401k plans. Right. Now, after 2008, 9 and the crisis, right, what you got in 401k plans was employers stopped their contributions because they're totally voluntary, right? They stopped their contributions to 401k plans. And of course, you know, that was a major problem. For $4 trillion were lost because the investments in the 401ks were in stock markets. People thought stock markets were going to go up forever after 2007, and they lost their shirt, right? Now, what also happened was Social Security retirement age was raised to 67 years. The retirement age. Oh, right. And attack on public workers, which is the remaining bastion of defined benefit plans, really increased. States were taking the ability of workers to negotiate pensions out of their hands and saying, oh, it's in the state legislature. They couldn't negotiate that. So we have this, you know, massive attack on defined benefit pension plans going on. We have the attempt to privatize Social Security, stealing the trust fund going on. And, of course, savings collapsed. So the three stools, as they said, of the post-war retirement system have all collapsed here, retirement in the United States. And now what we got under Trump here, to finish this little historical overview, what we got under Trump is a further attack on defined benefit pension plans. In other words, both 401ks and DBPs are now legal to annuitize. In other words, companies are selling their DBPs and their 401ks off to insurance companies. And insurance companies are transforming them into annuities. In other words, we'll pay you so much per month. But of course, the insurance companies don't do that out of the goodness of their heart. No, they charge fees, big fees. Annuities charge big fees. So annuitizing is what's going on now for 401ks and under Trump, right? And the further decline of defined benefit pension plans. I think only 15% of the workforce now is covered by DBPs, and most of those are public workers, right? And multi-employer DBPs are in a deep crisis and about to collapse. And we just had a law passed this past week, right, which allow multi-employers to form 401ks, in other words, pay brokers and asset managers fees, and transform them into annuities, in other words, get the insurance companies to get in and get fees, too. The old 401ks had fees of 0.25%, but now that they're annuitized, the insurance companies are going to charge fees of 3.6%. Yeah. Other changes, too. I forget what they call this, the Secure Act. Secure Act, yeah, the latest ripoff here of pensions. Okay, that's the American model. That's the American model. And what we got today is over half of the labor force has no savings whatsoever. They're living paycheck to paycheck, right? They've got no retirement prospect for that one-third stool. Their 401ks, if they have one, are barely $18,000, $20,000, $30,000. How are you going to live off of that through the rest of your life? And they no longer have a defined benefit pension plans. All they got is Social Security, which pays on average about $1,200 a month. How are you going to live on that with no savings? We've got tens of millions of people now approaching retirement, and they have no way to survive. No way to survive. Tens of millions of Americans, because the retirement system has been destroyed. The American retirement model is a farce, and it's totally destroyed. And that's why people over 65 are going back working. They can't afford not to. In other words, work until you drop. Till you drop dead, right? At the same time, the government's raising Social Security retirement, 66, 67. Next year, they're going to try to raise it even more. This is the American model, and it's busted. This is what France is trying to impose on the French workers, and the French workers are saying no, and they're hitting the streets. Do we have Alan Benjamin on yet? Alan, are you there yet? Gee, I guess Alan never got the call in. Okay, so let me do my best. I can't give you an eyewitness report on what's going on in France. You know, all I can do is tell you what I'm reading in the business media and the business press and the alternative media and so forth, which isn't always an accurate picture. But let's let me give you a sense. Well, the most important thing is, as I've said, we got the American model that the French President Macron is attempting to impose on the French workers, and they are resisting. There's a general strike going on. You don't hear much of that in American business mainstream media, do you? They don't want to give workers over here the idea that, gee, maybe you can resist, right? And you don't have to starve in retirement, right? Starve and die, whatever. You know, a lot of our homelessness is people retiring and they can't afford to pay their rents, which are rising as well, right? A lot of that is not people who are mentally ill and living on the street. No, it's people who can't survive on Social Security, $1,100, $1,200 on average. They can't survive on that. How do you survive on that, right? With no savings, right? Oh, the savings rate has gone up, according to U.S. data. Well, it's gone up for the wealthiest 10% who have been making big bucks from financial asset investments. And, of course, that's going into their savings rate. Their savings more, yeah, of course. And by the way, you know, while defined benefit pension plans are being eliminated for workers, managers are doubling and tripling up on DBPs. They're called deferred pensions, and they get two or three of these things. And of course, they don't pay taxes on deferred pensions. You know, they shield their salaries and their stock income, you know, in the short term until they retire. Yeah, two or three of them. I guarantee you, I've been in companies where, you know, managers, even middle managers, you know, directors and senior managers and, you know, VPs, were getting two and three defined benefit pension plans while the companies were destroying DBPs for the rest. Okay, back to France. General strike going on, right? Part of labor market reform. In general, this is neoliberalism, you see. Neoliberalism is about privatizing many things, an industrial policy that privatizes corporations and privatizes legislation and social benefits. And the attempt is to privatize pensions. In other words, collective pensions where workers have some power, either politically through representatives, you know, to get improvements in Social Security, or through unions. You know, you destroy the unions, you destroy defined benefit pension plans. And, of course, private unions are now down to 6% of the labor force in the U.S., right? And we've got public employees, still about 30%, but there's a massive attack on public workers going on, and they're slowly chipping away at that membership. And once it gets weak, they'll get rid of their defined benefit pension plans, turn them into cash balance plans or something. That's going on in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But neoliberalism, is, as I've been saying in previous shows here, consists of four areas of policy. One is fiscal policy, in other words, tax cuts for corporations, businesses, and investors. Mm-hmm. Tax hikes on the middle class by eliminating credits and so forth. A vast increase in defense war spending, that's fiscal policy, while they try to cut social spending programs. That's fiscal policy of neoliberalism. Monetary policy of neoliberalism is the central bank keeping interest rates low, you know, chronically low for a long period of time. Well, chronic low interest rates means retirees on fixed income get no interest payments, so their income is reduced, right? While at the same time, corporations get to borrow at very low rates, you see. So you're really transferring money from retirees' fixed income to corporations in lower borrowing costs, you see. But the low interest rates also mean the dollar is kept low in value. And that's part of the neoliberal capitalism objective in the U.S. because a low dollar means U.S. companies that have moved offshore and are making a lot of profits offshore get to repatriate that profits back to the U.S. at a higher rate. If the dollar was rising in value and interest rates were rising, then they would repatriate less. But because they got to convert their profits in foreign currencies into dollar before they bring it back, you see. And if the dollar is high, they lose profits in the conversion process. So a low interest rates, low dollar value, monetary policy of neoliberalism. Neoliberalism is also free trade policy and unlimited foreign direct investment by U.S. corporations abroad. You know, moving the money out of the U.S., investing abroad where everything is cheaper, no environmental controls, and taxes are lower. Hmm? money, free trade in money flows, not just good flows, free trade in good flows like NAFTA, but in money flows. In fact, if you read NAFTA, the document, the original document, most of it had to do with defining conditions in which American corporations would get to move to Mexico on preferred terms, right? It's not just about goods flows, it's about money flows. So free trade is part of that. What I've called the exchange rate policy, keeping the dollar low in relationship to other currencies, that's part of neoliberalism. And what I call the twin deficits. In other words, the U.S. purposely runs a trade deficit with everybody in the world with the understanding that the indigenous capitalists in those countries that are benefiting from selling their goods to the U.S., those indigenous capitalists will recycle the excess dollars that are coming into their country because of free trade. They will recycle it back to the U.S. buying treasury bonds and bills and so forth, which enables the U.S. government to fund a budget deficit, the second deficit, the budget deficit, and allows it to spend more, therefore creating the deficit, on war spending, Pentagon, and by massive corporate tax cuts. So the twin deficits, trade deficit, budget deficit, are linked. And that's part of neoliberalism as well. Okay, so this policy of privatization of pensions is the fourth leg, you might say, of the table of neoliberalism, deregulation of industry, privatization of businesses, wage compression, divert social insurances, health care, pensions, whatever, onto the backs of workers, and lower the cost of pensions for corporations. Now, that's what's going on in France. You know, what Macron wants to do, apparently, is to raise the retirement age. You know, retirement age in France, the full retirement age, is 62. In the U.S., it's been raised to 67, and it's going to go up further. Well, Macron wants to do the same thing. Now, he can't raise it from 62 to 67. What he's proposing initially is to raise it to 64. But there are workers in other industries that are retiring under the French pension, government pension system, its equivalent Social Security, and the private pension system, are retiring even earlier at 55. You know, we used to be able to retire at 55 after 30 years of service. If you were not a worker or a steel worker, you used to be, it was called 55 and out. You would have a pension plan with Social Security that would allow you to survive. The pension plan alone would allow you to survive at 55 and out after 30 years of service, if you had a defined pension plan, right? Well, that's been totally eliminated, you see, totally. That no longer exists, not for quite some time. And employers, of course, in the auto industry and so forth, as they hire temp workers, right? They don't make any contribution to them at all, 401k or defined benefit pension plan, right? They get nothing. Big savings for corporations, right? Raising it to 64. Now, Macron also has this strange thing called a point system. Very complicated. He wants to aggregate all the pension, private pension plans, and the government plan into one big plan, and based on a point system. Like the U.S. model, right? The amount of pension you would get would be determined by your points over your whole lifetime of work. The current French pension plan allows you to get a pension based upon your last 6 months or year salary, you see, not based upon some averaging and downsizing of what you earn, because when you start out working, of course, you're not making as much decades earlier. So it's really, the point system is really an indirect way of avoiding and reducing retirement benefit payments, right? Now, the government, is anticipating, French government, that its deficit, its government deficit, is going to increase. And as its baby boomers retire here, the amount it's going to have to pay payout is going to start increasing as well. So, you know, it's trying to reduce the amount it has to pay now that the chicken's coming home to roost and they got to make these retirement payments. Well, that's just what the U.S. has done, hasn't it? You raise the retirement age, that means fewer people are going to retire and you have to pay fewer Social Security pension benefits, you see. And the same in France, the government pension, they'd have to pay less. So they're paying for their budget deficit on the backs of the workers and their retirement, in other words, right? And of course, it's going to eliminate, discourage early retirement, the point system, because if you retire early, you're not going to generate the points, right, that you need and reduce your pension, right? So, you know, all of these terms and conditions, raising the minimum retirement wage, eliminating early retirement, reducing the amount you're going to get because of some averaging of points, right? And also, I think a proposal is to allow you to cash out, in other words, take a lump sum here if you want, and the government doesn't have to continue paying for you. You know, any of these lump sum payments is what amounts to a reduction of what the company would have paid you if they continued paying you a retirement or a wage. You know, in the recent auto settlements, you know, big lump sum payments by the General Motors. Well, a lump sum payment cost them significantly less than if they had to pay you in wages over a period of time. And they like lump sum payments, you see. Well, part of the French model is a lump sum payment now. Okay, so, the government's reducing its cost. Businesses will reduce their cost. And who's going to pay the difference? Well, the workers are going to pay, the French workers. And they know this, and it's a massive strike continuing to go on right now. It may bring down the Macron government. We'll see. The French government tried back in the 90s to do the same thing and had to back off because of massive strikes. But the French workers, and this is across the board, all workers, all industries, public, private, you know, transport, manufacturing, everything. They're all out in the streets. And so far, the unions are united, and you know, they're following the working class here. They don't dare not to. And that's what's going on now. And, you know, Macron's going to try to buy people off with some other goodie that they'll take away later. But that's what's going on in France. Very important development. You know, resisting the American retirement model that's totally busted. You know, we have a retirement crisis in this country. People living paycheck to paycheck, you know, tens of millions of them. Retirees trying to live off of $1,100 in Social Security benefits, going back to work. This is where a lot of these job creations are, you know, because the over 65 age group in the U.S. is the fastest growing sector of the labor force in the U.S. They're going back to work because they're starving and they can't afford not to. Yeah. And a lot of these jobs are second and third jobs that are being recorded. They're not primary jobs, first jobs in the U.S., well, we talked about that before, but what we got in the U.S. is a crisis of epic proportions in the retirement system. 401ks provide you a couple tens of thousands. You can't live off of that anymore. Social Security, you know, only one third if that. And there is no defined benefit pension plans, only 401ks that have collapsed. Okay, that's it. And maybe next week we'll get our guest on. And the French strike will continue, I'm sure, and we'll be able to talk about that with our guest in more detail. Okay, that's it for today.